This week on the show, it's all about concerns. Are you concerned with the Red Sox shrinking divisional lead? Are you concerned about who's going to be catching balls for the New England Patriots? And are you concerned about how much certain Americans know about the dairy industry? All that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. Welcome to the show. I am Alex Barth. He is Alex Lebowitz. This is the Calling It podcast powered by CLNS. Our last preseason for football show. Lebowitz, the Patriots will play a meaningless game against it. Well, they're not meaningless against the New York Giants. Obviously, any bit of revenge, it will never make up for it. Any little bit of revenge is good, but how's that practice today? They're getting ready for week one. They're getting ready for the Houston Texans. It's getting very real.
Yeah, we're approaching week one of the NFL season. I'm excited. But yeah, I'm not looking forward to this game. It's kind of just in the way between now and the start of the regular season. But yeah, you inch closer. You just hope that everyone stays healthy and you kind of look for any cuts that might be on the horizon.
There are still things, though, that do need to be sorted out. The main issue right now seems to be the wide receiver depth chart. Who is going to be catching balls from Tom Brady specifically in those first 4 weeks when Julian Edelman is suspended, Eric Decker retiring? I think last time we did a show, Kenny Britt was on the team too. Correct me if I'm wrong. Did he get cut like Tuesday? Of course it was Tuesday.
He got cut middle of last week, I think.
So Pat's down two receivers from the last time we talked, so that leaves him with – look, Dorsett and Hogan are fine. And then after that, is it McCarron? Is it Berrios? Is it Patterson? And I said it – I won't lie. I said it to an extent for content a couple weeks ago. I'd first brought up, you know, I'm a little concerned about the wide receiver group, but this is real now. Look, can they still make it to the AFC Championship game? Sure, but this is looking reminiscent of, you know, like 2006 or 2013, the Kembrell Tompkins, Josh Boyce years. And yeah, those teams will win games. They'll win 10 to 12 games, which is what most fans would love, but that's just not going to win you a Super Bowl. This group of receivers are not going to win you a Super Bowl. I think it has to be considered at this point that the Patriots need to go somewhere externally and get another experienced pass catcher, whether it is Dez Bryant, whether it's a guy they go for a smaller name free agent like a Dontrell Inman or a Chris Matthews, or whether they finally pull the trigger on those Larry Fitzgerald rumors we've had for 10 years.
Yeah, I don't think they're quite at that point yet. You have to remember they still have Rob Gronkowski. You have Chris Hogan, who's not a household name by any means of any stretch of the imagination. But when you have James White in your backfield and Julian Edelman coming back, those are four pretty damn good wide receivers. That's a decent selection to choose from. So I don't think it's necessarily a priority. Decker leaving is definitely a story, but how much of an impact was he going to make anyways? And wasn't he on the trade block as it was? So I don't know. I don't think it's really as big of a concern for me as it is for a lot of people. I think they'll survive and they'll be fine. And it really comes down to the fact that they're going to have Julian Edelman back. And again, those top four targets, Edelman, Gronk, Hogan, and James White, are still going to be better than most other teams' top four wide receiver targets.
We've seen this team. Look, Gronk's a great player, not to take anything away from him. But it seems like in his career with the Patriots, there have been two very defined kind of Patriots teams. The Patriots teams that rely on Gronk, the teams that need Gronk, and then the Patriots teams that can get by without Gronk, that use him when they need, but they're not reliant on him. And the teams that weren't reliant on him, I would say, were the team that lost last year to the Eagles and the two that the one that won the Super Bowl against Seattle. The rest of the teams, I guess, outside of the Atlanta team, and they had Martellus Bennett, who was a damn good player, needed Rob Gronkowski, and look how that went. He's not going to play 16 games. You're not guaranteed to see him in January. It's a nice thought, but let's be realistic here. They can't build their offense around him. As good of a player as he is not reliable enough. He cannot stay on the field reliably enough that you can plan your offense around him. Anything he gives you is extra.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. The reality is, Julian Edelman, is he really your number one wide receiver? Maybe on a lot of teams he is, but it's good to have someone who has a different type of skill set than he does. And Rob Gronkowski is one of the best receiving targets in the NFL. But you said it. He has injury problems. He's injury prone, just like Edelman is. And Hogan, who's had numerous injuries.
Right, so how are you not concerned about the wide receivers they have, knowing that?
I guess my answer is I am concerned. My concern level never really went up after the Kenny Britt release or the Eric Decker retirement. That said, yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to them bringing in a decently big name, someone like Demaryius Thomas.
I'm out on Thomas. I think he has sucked for 3 years now. His catches have gone down each of the last 4 years. His yards have gone down each of the last 4 years. His touchdowns have gone down each of the last 4 years. He's soft. He can't get hit. As soon as he gets contact, he drops the ball. And that's where I wanted to go next. So the Demaryius Thomas rumors, the Dez Bryant rumors. I don't think Dez Bryant's going to happen at this point. I think if it was going to happen, it would have happened. But a guy like Randall Cobb, for instance, who was Green Bay supposedly shopping. Are you okay with them sacrificing what may be a second or third round pick to go get a wide receiver at this point?
Oh yeah. I don't care about picks for the most part. I think it'd be a worthwhile effort. And Demaryius Thomas, you don't need a guy to receive for 1,100, 1,200 yards and 10 touchdowns. You need someone who gets 700 to 800 yards receiving so that they can at least just add something to the offense. So when I said they maybe need a number one target outside of a Julian Edelman and Rob Gronkowski, I don't know about that. I think they just need a really good number two or number three target outside of those guys. That said, yeah, I don't think the, you know, 2 through 7, none of those are really off limits for the Patriots. Would I like to see them keep draft picks? Sure. But you're going for a championship now and your window's closing. And right now that's the weak spot on your team. But I don't think that really differs for any position outside of a few for the Patriots. I would be down for them, you know, adding depth to anything on the defense with the exception of that defensive line. And I would be up for them adding depth to that offensive line on top of that. So, yeah, give up one of those picks. And I think that's probably what we're going to see. We're going to see them get a mid to high level wide receiver for a pick or two. And in the NFL, the good thing is you can get pretty good value for one of those picks. So, yeah, maybe we'll see it.
Well, there's a lot of names floating around out there, and it's going to be up to Belichick to find the right one. And there's talk about him scouting receivers. So it's going to be interesting. Before we wrap up our football segment, one wide receiver got well taken care of today. That's Odell Beckham Jr. Is it $95 million contract, 65 guaranteed, the largest ever given to a receiver? It's interesting to see what the Giants are doing, because I think this may be the new way of doing business in the NFL with how expensive some of these contracts are going. The Giants, I mean, that's it. That's their big acquisition for the next 2 or 3 years. It's going to eat up a large chunk of salary. So what it looks like they're trying to do is you pay Beckham like he's the quarterback. Now next year they draft a quarterback. That guy will be on his rookie deal. So Beckham's being paid like the quarterback. You bring in the draft pick quarterback, and then you have about a 3-year window to win a Super Bowl. And then you either have to let Beckham go or you have to let the quarterback go or figure something out. Beckham has to restructure. So I don't know about that, because I feel like you're putting a lot of faith in a rookie quarterback to succeed. And there's been more examples of rookie wide receivers hitting and being good guys taken in the first round than quarterbacks. So it's an interesting strategy, but it's one that it looks like the Giants are going to try. The Pittsburgh Steelers are setting themselves up to try something like that with paying Antonio Brown and then maybe bringing in a quarterback. This may be the new way of doing business. And as people who follow the Patriots, it's as foreign as you can get paying a wide receiver. But I think we saw a real shift in NFL operating procedure today.
Yeah, and I think so as well. You said it. They're selling out for the draft. They're not going to go out and pay a high-level quarterback in the open market. They're not going to have the funds, because not only have they invested in Odell Beckham Jr. with this recent contract, they put a ton of money into that defense on top of it. And their offense.
They paid Nate Solder.
Exactly, yeah. So, again, they put a lot of money into that team. They don't have a lot of cap room left, if I had to guess. And another thing to consider is, what's Eli Manning's contract? When is his contract up, and how much space will that open up in their with their cap, which is something they're obviously considering. But yeah, they're not getting the guy in the free agency. They're going to go through the draft, which makes you think that they have someone they're eyeing right now, and whether they're going to tank for him or whether it's someone who they think is going to be, available in rounds 2 through 4. We'll see. But I don't think you make that move unless you have a plan for the future. And in the NFL, that plan starts at the quarterback position. So if that's not the plan for the Giants, then yeah, it's a big mistake. I don't think it's worth paying any player that much money if you don't have your quarterback positions set up.
And let's remember, Beckham's had trouble staying on the field too. Real quick before we wrap it up, Antonio Brown's going to get a new contract soon too. Do you think he tops Odell?
I mean, he should. He's better than Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about what the Steelers cap situation is, but I look at a guy like Antonio Brown, he's probably going to want to get paid. The question is, Le'Veon Bell's not signed yet, is he?
No, and I don't think they can re-sign him. I think you have to re-sign Brown. I think Brown becomes the first $100 million wide receiver. Bell wants to be paid like a quarterback. And I think this, there probably is a way – I don't have all the numbers in front of me. There probably is a way the Steelers could pay Brown and Bell, but I think Bell's asking price is just stupid high. And
well, look at what Todd Gurley got. Todd Gurley, didn't he get a ridiculous contract?
I think Bell asked for like $10 million more than that initially. The Steelers offered him something that would have made him the highest paid running back in football. I don't think it was more than Gurley, but I believe it would have made him at the time the highest paid running back in football, and he asked for – 25-30% more. So look, he may sit out. He may sit out because he's asking for something completely unrealistic, but that factor again is even more the reason I think the Steelers have to make Antonio Brown the highest paid receiver in football. And then you either, if they like Mason Rudolph, and I think Mason Rudolph's going to be a good NFL quarterback, if they like Mason Rudolph or if they take someone in the first round next year, that gives you a window where you have a quarterback on a very affordable contract, you have a somewhat young defense, they have to work on that defense. And then you're paying the wide receiver. And I think that's the future. That's what it's going to look like. These wide receivers are going to get the mega deals, and you're going to have a young quarterback surrounded by veteran receivers, as opposed to what it is now, where you pay the quarterback all the money and then you try to piece the rest of it together through the draft. So interesting strategy by the Giants. We will see if it works out. My bet would be no, but come back and cold take me on that in 4 years. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, you're gambling on the quarterback position. Maybe you don't need a good quarterback to really win. Someone might break that mold. We saw the Broncos do it in 2013 with Peyton Manning. Yeah, I said it.
No, Peyton Manning sucked. Peyton Manning sucked in Denver. He was
bad. He was overrated. He was bad. Yeah. You look at Trent Dilfer. That's always the name thrown out there. But it's so much harder to do it that way.
Those two teams you just mentioned, the 2013 Broncos, the 2000
years
Ravens,
apart, 13 years and, apart.
Right. Well, and I'll throw in the 2002 Tampa Bay Buccaneers with Brad Johnson. Yeah. Those were all time. You're talking about three of the best defenses of the century.
Yeah.
In the 2000 Ravens, the 2002 Buccaneers, and the 2013 Broncos. So I don't know if the Giants have the defense of the century on the way, and that's what it may take if they're counting on a guy like Kyle Lauletta to go out and win a Super Bowl.
We'll see. It's a gamble no matter what way you look at it.
We will see. Speaking of gambling, I know some people put some money down on the Red Sox winning the division when they went up 10 games. Those people are biting their fingernails right now. We'll talk about that on the other side. This is Calling It, powered by CLNS.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to the Concern episode of the Calling It podcast. I'm Alex Barth. He's Alex Lovitz. We're concerned about wide receivers, but I think I'm more concerned about the Red Sox divisional lead for however long it lasts. They are 6 games up on the Yankees after being 10 up, but remember, the teams do have 6 head-to-head games left. Did I say it on this show or not? I definitely said it somewhere that the lead was not as big as people made it out to be, and here we go. No Chris Sale. We have a pennant race again.
Yeah, I'm starting to get a little bit worried. 6 games, it's really not that much, and given the way the Sox are playing – you know, it's inconsistent to what we've seen all season long, but you can't help but be worried given the performance. I'll say this. We're recording this on Monday. It's a day off, a much-needed day off for the Red Sox.
And Chris Sale starts a throwing program today, so that indicates that he will pitch again in the regular season. I don't think anybody thought he wouldn't, but they need him back now. This is not that cushion that they had. They used it up. They used it up rather quickly. Getting swept by the Tampa Bay Rays. And don't get me wrong, the Rays have been a much better team this year. than people thought they would be. I think they've been maybe the surprise of professional baseball this year. All the credit to them, but the Red Sox should not be getting swept by the Tampa Bay Rays, especially where they're at right now. I'm a little disappointed. Look, were they going to finish up 10 games? Are they going to win the division by double digits? No, I don't think that was ever going to happen, but I don't know how they, I don't know how they used up this cushion this quickly, right? That's like when you go to the casino with a $100 bill and all of a sudden you're down $80 at the first roulette table. You haven't even stepped over to the cards yet.
Yeah. It's not good. It seems to be dwindling fast. The Yankees are playing pretty good baseball. The Rays, you got to give them credit. They've won, what, 8 games in a row right now. They're on fire. Kevin Cash might be manager of the year over Cora. Probably not. I don't think he would deserve it. But they should be playing better. But I'm not all that concerned, and I'll tell you why. The problem, it's been their starting pitching to an extent. Their bullpen, we've always been concerned about. But their lineup has not been hitting well at all. Only 5 runs in that sweep. Three hits alone in that series finale. They're not as bad as they've been playing. Mookie Betts has been looking god awful. JD Martinez has been slumping. Those guys are going to pull it around, and I think this lineup in general is going to pull it around.
But are they going to? This is what's happened for the last, and this is why
they're pitching.
No, to everybody. This is why I couldn't buy in on the team. Xander Bogaerts traditionally has sucked in September. Mookie Betts has not had good Septembers. This is what this team has done for the last 2 years. There's no reason to be surprised. And I keep hearing people say, oh, well, the reinforcements are coming. They're going to get Sale back. They're going to get Devers back. They're going to get Vasquez back. But look who the Yankees are getting back. The Yankees are going to get Aaron Judge back. I know they have a couple other guys. Who else is on the DL there? Is Andujar hurt? Sanchez. Yeah. It's Sanchez. They're going to get Gary Sanchez and Aaron Judge back. So let me ask you, for this final stretch, who's really getting the better reinforcements? The Red Sox and Devers, Sale and Vasquez, or the Yankees and Judge and Sanchez?
I think the Red Sox, because Chris Sale is more important to this team than.
But Chris Sale's only going to play once every 5 days, and it's such a short week. You're only probably going to get 4 games out of Chris Sale between the time he comes back and the end of the season.
Yeah, I'm talking in general, not only for the rest of the regular season, but for the playoffs.
No, but I'm saying just in the context of the divisional race, the reinforcements coming for the divisional race, who's getting more help, the Red Sox or the Yankees? Because I think it may be the Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, if you add Sanchez and Judge into the equation, it probably is the Yankees, just because Devers and I mean, Vasquez specifically isn't going to be getting all that much time, I don't think, because Leon's been calling some really good games. Although that's doing well too.
Swihart's been playing well too.
And Swihart has been playing pretty well as well. So that might put him third on that depth chart. But yeah, probably the Yankees in that scenario. That said, I'm still not going to be too concerned. This is the worst we've seen them play all season. I think we need to keep that in perspective. If they don't bounce back this week, if they don't win both of these games against the Marlins, I'll be concerned. I think they're going to be coming back home. They're coming off a day of rest, not too long of a flight up to Boston. So they'll be good to go. And I think that playing a team like the Marlins is perfect for this time. The timing is incredible. And then you play Chicago coming up this weekend. Yeah, it's worrisome a little bit, but for me, it's kind of yet to be determined. They play bad. They've still won a couple games. They look good here and there. I still have confidence that they can pull it together and that the people coming off the DL can put them over that edge.
Well, just remember this, and you mentioned that easy stretch, and they need to clean up because this is why the cushion was so important. Once the calendar flips to September, at Atlanta versus Houston versus Toronto versus the Mets, at the Yankees, at Cleveland versus Baltimore versus the Yankees. So they got 6 against New York, 3 against Cleveland, 3 against Houston, 3 against Atlanta. Those are good teams. Those are teams that they're going to struggle to beat. So, yes, they realistically should win the next 6, 2 against Miami and 4 against the White Sox, because let's say they split there. You may take 2 or 3 against Atlanta, but that's a tough sweep. We know how much trouble Houston gives them. And then again, 6 against the Yankees and 3 on the road in Cleveland. Those are a lot of doubtful games. You need Chris Sale. Chris Sale should pitch at least once in each of those series. he should pitch at least once against the Yankees in between those six games. You hope you see him once against Cleveland and then once against either Houston or Atlanta if he's back in time. And I think you need that.
Well, you hope that you don't need Chris Sale for those last three games of the season, because that's who they're closing that's who they're closing out against, right?
You're back. Okay, jump in.
Back. So I was saying you're hoping you don't need Chris Sale for those last three games against the Yankees. You hope the division's locked up by then. If not, it's going to be some fun baseball that we'll see in late September. But another person you're missing, by the way, Eduardo Rodriguez. If he comes back and he pitches like he did in Pawtucket last week, four innings, eight strikeouts, one hit allowed, no earned runs. Again, that's AAA. That could have been fluky. But if he comes back and he pitches well, that's one of these bumps from the starting rotation. You don't have to, there's no need for Hector Velasquez to be in the starting rotation. There's no need for Brian Johnson to pitch more than two innings out of the bullpen. So that could be big as well. I still have confidence in this team. And given the way that Price has been pitching, given the fact that you have Chris Sale coming back, and given the fact that you have Eduardo Rodriguez coming back, who I have confidence can pick it up, I think that they could keep this lead, and I feel like they can even extend it if it comes down to it, simply because they've just been playing really good baseball all season, and what we've seen lately is an anomaly relative to everything else.
I think that end-of-the-year schedule, they need to be healthy for that. To me, it depends on Sale coming back. It really, that's it. How many starts do they get out of Sale down the stretch?
Well,
that's what it hinges on to me. And I know I said that Chris – look, here's what it is. The Yankees are going to get Judge back. They're going to get Stanton back. Sanchez. I know Sanchez has sucked this year, but he's 6-for-12 career against David Price with five home runs, and overall he's hit the Red Sox pretty well. So they're going to have him in the head-to-head, and they're going to have Judge. Can Chris Sale give you enough starts that if you split those series with the Yankees, if you only win three of those six, you're still okay? I think you need at least four or five starts out of Chris Sale to do that.
I mean, if you win three of six against the Yankees, that's evening it out, no?
Can the Red Sox, again, can the Red Sox be six games better with that stretched schedule than the New York Yankees, who play nobody outside of the Red Sox in their season?
Or, this is a glass half empty approach, can they be no worse than five games worse than the Yankees in the home stretch?
I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that's what it's going to come down to.
It might. Hey, it might. And I think they can. I absolutely think they can. What about this? This is a conspiracy theory, Alex Jones, for you. What if Chris Sale has been out? And this is a theory I've kind of floated around. They've eyed this part of the season. They know in September the Red Sox stink. A lot of these players, you said it, Mookie Betts falls apart, Xander Bogaerts falls apart, and yeah, Chris Sale falls apart. What if they saw this on their calendar back in, I don't know, April, May, June?
Who's they? Who's they? The Red Sox or the Yankees?
It's they. No, the Red Sox. Like Dombrowski and Cora.
Okay.
So what if they saw that? And they're like, I think if we get to a point where we have enough of a cushion, and maybe that cushion was eight games, they said, we'll sit Sale. We want him fresh. We want him good to go. He'll be ready come September. Just a theory I'm throwing out there.
No, I like that. That they
guess when he comes back, he's not going out again. Even if he has inflammation in that shoulder, that quote-unquote inflammation, which I don't know if I buy, even if he has that in his shoulder, he's playing. He's going to play throughout the season. They're not going to give him any more rest because they don't have that luxury now, and they're going to want him to be, locked and loaded for the playoffs. So I think that is very much a possibility, again, given the cushion that they did have in the division.
No, I like that, and it's a chance to keep him fresh, but the question is now – the risk is, and we saw he pitch well against Baltimore, but can he pitch well with that time off? How fast can he get himself going again? And when's he going to be back? That even if that is the thing, they can't hold him out too long. I think he needs to come back sooner rather than later, but we will see when he returns. Of course, we still have a lot of baseball talk. I'm looking forward to that Mets series. I really am, because it's going to give us a chance to have some fun. And the Red Sox better clean up on that like they better clean up this week.
We got to get Dan Butek on the show.
We will have Dan Butek on for the Mets for sure.
It will be a therapy session, if anything.
We got one more segment for you on the other side. Keep it here. This is Callin' It, powered by CLNS.
Callin' It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to Calling It. If you follow us on Twitter, at Calling It Podcast, by the way, on Twitter, you know that the description of the show is sports and entertainment podcast. Now, well, that was originally done just so we could get a couple of extra, we could be a little more visual on iTunes when you search the show. And the last couple of weeks, I think, Lebowitz, we've done our best to kind of add to that entertainment resume. Entertainment being a broad term, essentially meaning not sports. But so we were looking for our chaos segment topic today, and you brought a certain survey to my attention.
Yeah, a recent survey was done that said 23% of Americans believe that chocolate milk comes from brown calves. I'll let that sit.
That's like, and I feel like I've seen this survey before. My first question is: is it a survey of people 18 or older? Because if it's not, fine. Like, we all had that thought at some point, but no. Like, so when I had chocolate milk growing up, right? I never had like Nesquik or like any of the chocolate milk that came in the carton. I had milk. And I had either Hershey's or what was the powder one? Their slogan was like, kids love it because it tastes good. Moms love it because it's healthy. Oh, man. I forget what it's called. But what was it?
I'm not sure. I know Nesquik. I know the Hershey, the syrup.
Right. I had the syrup. I poured myself a glass of milk, regular milk, and then I added the chocolate. So it blows my mind that number's that high, just because I thought that's how people drank chocolate milk. I didn't think people went and actually bought the cartons of chocolate milk. Like, who does that?
I mean, the name is in the title where it comes from.
Right.
What, milk?
Do you think that these cows are also made of chocolate? All right, there we go. First swear on the show. The tinfoil Easter bunny that you unwrap, and then there's just a bunny inside. Do they think that's what those cows are?
You know what I thought of? What's his name? Tim Burton. Who was the guy who originally wrote Willy Wonka? Doll. Something Doll.
Oh, Roald Dahl.
He missed an opportunity to put a brown cow in his book that makes chocolate milk. I mean, would that have not been a staple?
That's right out of Willy Wonka's factory? That's right out of Willy Wonka. But again, what I want to know now is – the next survey I want is how did you – get chocolate milk growing up? Did you have it come straight chocolate from the carton or the bottle, or did you have to mix regular milk with the chocolate? But I don't know, did you do it that way, or did you have the pre-made?
Yeah, I wasn't much of a chocolate milk guy, but I know where I whenever I did drink chocolate milk, it was the Hershey's bottle, and you mix it
right.
Yeah, I never got the stuff straight out of the bottle.
I still occasionally do that, you know, if I've had a long day sitting down, not quite feeling an adult beverage, I'll have a glass of chocolate milk, sure.
And if you're feeling an adult beverage, put it in there.
Okay. You know what, actually? A little bit of Bailey's? It's not the worst thing in the world.
Come on, what's that? Eggnog, come on.
What order do you do? Do you do the syrup and then the milk, or the milk and then the syrup?
I don't think there's really a wrong way to do it.
Oh, no, there's 100% a wrong answer to that question.
Okay. I think I put the syrup in first and pour the milk in.
Okay, you're a good man. You're a good man, Alex Lebowitz. If you put the milk in first, then the syrup just kind of sits there on top. If you put the syrup in first, the gravity, the force of the milk hitting the syrup forces it to disperse throughout the beverage, I guess. But
throughout the glass.
23% really, brown cows.
And over 50% did not know where it came from. So
okay, that's even worse.
Yeah,
that's That to me is even worse. At least these 23% of people have some sort of belief, have some set of ideals that they subscribe to. They just get,
even if they're wrong.
These other 50% of people, they just have a brown liquid plop down in front of them and they drink it blindly.
Yeah.
Idiots. Idiots. Speaking of. Go ahead.
Go on. No. Go on.
I was going to say, speaking of chocolate, our one other point on this segment, and I saw this story today, and we couldn't decide what to do, but we figured there's a smooth transition in here. There's already spotted at Walmarts across the country displays set up for Halloween candy. Now, I know that it's like the cool thing now to say that fall is the best season. I still believe it's summer. I'm off having summer breaks, right? There's no more summer vacation. I still believe summer's the best season. Especially like this time of summer, really 4th of July to the end of the summer is the best. But I know people think it's cool to say fall, even though they're wrong. But It doesn't matter. Don't rush Halloween, because once you hit Halloween, then it's Thanksgiving, then it's New Year's, and the day after Christmas through St. Patrick's Day, except for the days the Patriots play in the playoffs, are the worst time of the year. Okay, New Year's is the most overrated holiday. It sucks. New Year's sucks, and then there's nothing in January and February again, except for Patriots playoff games. So to rush Halloween like that, it's like the Christmas music. You don't put out Halloween candy until Columbus Day, and then you don't start playing Christmas music until halfway between Halloween and Thanksgiving. Look, don't hate the player, hate the game. Those are the rules. If you're setting up Halloween candy at this point, you're a candy whore, I guess.
That's one way to put it. Yeah, it's a little premature. It's a little premature.
A little premature.
It's very premature. I'll change my phrasing. Some people love to rush.
I was going to make a comparison, but I don't know if there's one I want to make on the show.
No, not when you're talking in the context of premature. So there are some people who like to rush fall and just love autumn, love the leaves. I love the scenery of fall, but they love the pumpkin spice lattes and whatnot.
Pass.
Save it for October. Just say, or at least late September.
Wait till
after Yom Kippur. Just for us. Just for us.
For those viewers who don't understand that reference, that's about mid-September. It's a Jewish holiday. It's that day that you get off of work or school, and it right after it all starts up again, and you're not really sure why. That's what Yom Kippur is.
It's the one day you thank the Jews for.
Did you have school off for Yom Kippur when you were in grade school? I know you went to private. You didn't?
I did, yeah, yeah. Andover's not as populated with Jews as Sharon is.
Right. Well, the kids used to thank us, like the kids who didn't celebrate, because they would always go to like Six Flags or the aquarium or whatever on that day. They had this random day off in the middle of the week. They used to thank us for it.
Oh yeah, well, it was great because in high school I went to a boarding school up in New Hampshire. I could get excused from school, which is way better than just having a day off. Because, and this is really defeating the point of Yom Kippur. I sound like a horrible Jew, but I got to not go to school while everyone had to, which is kind of better.
That's clutch. You don't have to make that day up. You don't have to make that day up.
Exactly. Although there was one year I had to miss a football game. And that's just because my parents, you got a Jewish mother, you can't do anything in Yom Kippur.
Look, we can't all be Sandy Koufax.
No, we cannot.
You were like Sandy Koufax in that.
Oh, no, actually, you're right. I am. I'm Sandy Koufax of football.
Sandy Koufax, one in the same. How did we get into, all right, candy before Halloween. So, Lebowitz, when is it okay to put out Halloween candy?
I'll give it an exact date. I'll go September 21st.
Okay.
That might be a little late for some people.
I was going to, if anything, that's early. I would say that's probably, that's the absolute earliest you can, but I would say even a week later, because they put all the Halloween candy up, but you know, not that I've ever had a house where I've had to buy candy for people to come trick or treating to. This will be my first year, but I always hear stories about people going out to get the candy last minute. They go out on their way home from work on Halloween day. Nobody's buying their Halloween candy that early. I think the one year that my parents did when I was growing up, me, my dad, and my brother ate it all by like October 20th.
Yeah, it's going
to
happen.
So there's no need to put Halloween candy out this early. All of you, fall is the best season, people. Just calm down for a little bit. You'll have your moment with the flannels and the pumpkin spice and the carving the pumpkins and yada, yada, yada. Right, in the Ugg boots. You'll have that moment. Just let us summer people enjoy the end of ours first before you take over. That's all we ask.
And the sandals and the toeless sandals.
I think
they like to stretch it into the fall, and it bothers me. Anyway,
I start wearing my Tims as soon as I can.
I'm the same way. I'm a big Tims guy. I got to get some dress boots.
Well, the difference between me and you is I'm 5'8", so as soon as I get to wear Tims, I'm suddenly I'm much more confident once I wear Tims.
I'm not at the height where I can't use a couple inches. I would love to.
Aren't you like 6'1"?
6 feet about.
All right. You're fine. You don't need it.
Save some height for the rest of it. No, but one more point. Never, ever give candy out on Halloween. Just don't even bother, because you're just going to be dealing with –
No, you have to give out candy.
You don't. There's
what,
no
you hate
law.
Children?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
No, you give out candy on Halloween. What the hell is wrong with you?
I sit in, I watch movies or I go to a party and you're not coming to my house. I'm putting a caution tape around.
Put the movie on the TV. Just watch some Netflix by the door. You don't have to interact. You don't have to give out a whole handful, but there was nothing more disappointing growing up than knocking on a door and nobody being there trick or treating. Okay, that was the worst. You're giving back. That's what you're doing. You're giving back.
You know what you're doing? You're contributing to the obesity epidemic. That's what you're doing.
It's a little piece. I'm not giving out full size. I'm not giving out. Look, the people who give out full size, those people need to have their basements checked, because if you're like that's to another extreme. Okay. You want people to like you too much if you're giving out full size, but
yeah, you're
not a whole bag of Halloween candy at this point. Kids are so lazy. Look, back in my day, like I walked probably 2 or 3 miles trick-or-treating. We would hit houses in the hundreds.
When do you stop trick-or-treating?
Oh, I think
you were one of those 17-year-old ones, aren't you?
No. I think 8th grade was my last year trick-or-treating. Yeah, 8th grade was my last year trick-or-treating. Then I had a younger brother. So the next year or two, me and some of my friends, we would, you know, hide around the neighborhood and jump out and scare my brother and his friends.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
Not trick-or-treating, but I would still go out. I think I did that like freshman and sophomore year of high school. And gotcha. Then once I could drive, you know, I think that was it. But no, you're giving back. You have to we used to walk all over the place. Now these kids, they can't walk a block. Then they get tired. They're not getting enough candy, contributing to the obesity epidemic. They probably pick up as much candy. It's the equivalent of an afternoon at McDonald's at this point.
Yeah.
Show me a kid that's willing to walk 2 miles for his candy. I'll show you a kid that look, he's not going to be obese. He walked 2 miles for his candy. It's a problem that it takes care of itself.
True. You're burning the calories you're going to intake later. You know what's the most irresponsible thing? Putting your candy out unsupervised.
Oh, there's just idiot.
One a-hole that gets the benefit from it, and no one else gets any candy.
No, if I saw that, you take the bowl, you dump it in your bag. If you're with a couple of people, you split it up, you know, 2 or 3. I never had a trick-or-treat alone, luckily. I don't know if anybody did. no, you dump that bowl in the bag, and that's it, right? First come, first serve. It's trick-or-treat. If you don't get the treat, you're going to pull a trick, and the trick is your house getting egged and teepeed because you had an empty bowl sitting out for people who wanted candy. A little note's not going to stop a 13-year-old. You got a full bowl of candy right there. You go for it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you. You're leaving them no option. All you're doing is encouraging kids to commit, you know, not so nice behavior, to be dishonest. It's not dishonesty, but you know, 1 or 2 pieces of candy. That's kind of the request. No one's abiding by that. You leave it unsupervised. No candy for anyone else except that one kid.
And none of those stupid, what is it? The candies that are in the strawberry wrapper. I used to get a bunch of those. I never even had one. I didn't know what
they were.
The
hard candy?
The hard candy and strawberry wrapper. That's not candy. Cut that out. All right. This has been fantastic Halloween talk for August 27th. I've got it. We started the segment out saying people are getting to fall too early, and then we talked about trick-or-treating for about 5 minutes. We'll revisit this further down the line, of course, to keep up to date with our show. Follow us on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. Check us out online, clnsmedia.com. Next week, we will be all football. It's week 1, the Patriots and the Texans. I'm looking forward to it, Lebowitz. Watch, I'm cold taking myself. Something else will break, but here we go. It's getting real next week.
Can't wait. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. It's the one thing that gets me through fall. You know, beyond all the people that I hate who embrace it. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Make sure to check that show out next week. Until then, he's Alex Lebowitz. I'm Alex Barth. This has been Calling It. Thanks.